Okay, welcome everyone to this Board of Commissioners meeting. We will excuse Commissioner Sakovic and suspend the rules as he's unable to attend. We'll start the meeting with a prayer by Ezra Nair, and then Vic Devano will lead us in the pledge.
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful for the opportunity to gather together to discuss business of the county. We're grateful for thy care and protection in the wonderful weather today. We ask that thou would please bless those who cannot make it today and watch over them and comfort them. And we're thankful for the opportunity to have public discourse. And we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
I don't need a microphone. Thank you for all standing. Appreciate our great policemen, our warriors who served and served in the past, who are serving now.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. We're going to jump right into our recognition of the March Employee of the Month. This individual has another assignment here shortly, so we wanted to jump right in and recognize this individual. I always wonder if they know that they're being, and usually they coerce them to come to this meeting, and so I don't know if they know or not, but it's Crystal Thorne. And so based upon her reaction, it looks like maybe she didn't know that that was going to happen. So let me read a few nice things that your peers at work said about you, if that's okay. Crystal consistently demonstrates outstanding qualities that align perfectly with the mission of the Children's Justice Center. She has remarkable communication skills. She conveys empathy. She has a profound impact on the children that the Children's Justice Center serves, and is sensitive to the unique needs of each child, creating a safe and trusting environment. She has a calming influence and is instrumental in resolving challenges efficiently. And again, empathetic and adaptable nature, she is not only a good listener, but also makes a conscious effort to validate the perspectives and contributions of all team members. Crystal is an exceptional employee and coworker. So, without further ado, congratulations. And if you'll come up, we'll get a picture, and you're welcome to say something if you want.
And it's our understanding you're doing
court. I have court, yeah. So.
All right, we have a work session, our quarterly report from the Public Defenders Association. I thought I saw Josh here earlier. Okay. Okay.
Let's build our
We're doing pretty good today, aren't we, on time, moving right along with needing to get Crystal to court. So let's build our consent agenda, and then we can move into the work session. So items 1 through 9, Commissioner Gardner, do you have anything you'd like to hold?
I did not.
Okay. And items 11 through 19, let's just say items 11 through 20. I would like to hold 14 and 15.
Commissioners,
if we
could hold 20.
Holding 20, for sure. Yep, I have that as well. Mm-hmm. Property tax actions.
Yep, that was the only one that I actually had any questions on, was 20.
So 14, 15, 20, any others that you foresee? And then as far as closed, we want to hold item 24 for closed session. and strike the other three closed meetings.
I am holding regular agenda items number 14, 15, 20, and then as far as closed meetings, we're striking 21, 22, 23, and holding as stated 24.
Thank you. Okay, I see our public defenders are here. If you're ready, we'll...
And then as far as pulling up the... Oh, perfect. Good afternoon. Benjamin Young, Financial Manager, Utah County Public Defender Association. We're going to give a quarter four presentation on performance, finances, overall performance for quarter four, and rolling that together for the entire year of 2023. Agenda, discussing trends that we've seen in the district court 2021 to 2023, a detailed analysis of Q4 specifically for 2023, and then discussing budget versus actual, and then the detailed breakouts of those. So trend analysis, you'll see on this slide that I've listed for each year, the total budget, for Utah County Public Defender Association, as well as the portion of that was funded by IDC grants, and the number of hours required that were assigned to us in the cases that we were assigned, and then just the mathematical formula of dividing that total budget by the number of hours to get an hourly rate. Of particular concern in 2021, 2022, we're fairly consistent with marginal increases, significant increase in both the number of cases as well as the number of hours required. And the number of cases is reflected in higher cases being filed, but it doesn't quite capture the significance of a case being filed in with more serious charges than would be historical averages. So that's why we've included the chart to the right of hours required. On the next slide, we will go into detail on how those hours are calculated. But before we do, are there any questions on this slide?
I think we've spoke before, some of that is change of leadership, right?
And correct.
And the desire to prosecute more crimes, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, we don't have control over which crimes are we're assigned on. It's just the ones that the court assigns us, and we prepare effective assistance of counsel based on the cases that we receive.
Understood. So. Thanks, Ben.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to pass it to Josh Esplin, our chief counsel, to go through the detail of how those hours are calculated and what those cases look like for 2023.
Thanks, Ben. This is a chart that you've seen before, a similar one from me. And I have provided the ABA report. That's where these weight numbers come from. Aggravated murder is highlighted, and that's essentially because there is no weight for those. Those are separate. My understanding is that that'll be a separate study by them. And so I just used the 286 hours that would be for an LWOP, which is life without parole. Just so you're aware of what the columns and the abbreviations are, APS is appointments, so the total number of appointments. CON would be a conflict or cases that we did not retain in the office, so the TKO is total kept in the office. And then you have the weight that is taken from the ABA study. All these different case type categories are also from that study. And so then the hours needed would be the total kept in office times the weight provided, and then the CON hours needed is the conflict hours for the cases that were conflicted there. At the bottom, you have both. I broke it down because in years past, there has been some questions about orders to show cause. And so I broke down the totals with without ORS show cause and then with as well. And the total hours per attorney would be based on the, you know, the number of attorneys that we do have that are handling this particular caseload. And the total attorneys needed for hours required is just based on the study itself, using FTE equivalent hours for the amount of hours that a particular attorney can provide to representation. I don't know if you have any questions on these. Okay, thank you.
And I would just point out that the conflicted cases are still cases that are funded through our office and are part of our budget. So we continue to report them and to aggregate them into these numbers. For transparency, those are included in the full budget of the Utah County Public Defender Association. On the next slide, this is at a summary level based on the areas that we review expenses. First category being employee related expenses, second category program expenses, which would be defense resources, expert witnesses, investigators, copies, transcripts, those types of expenses, as well as conflict attorneys or contract attorneys that are covering defense resources. But those will all be directly tied to a case type of expenses, whereas our third category, general and administrative expenses, will be all the overhead expenses, the rent, the office space, the computers, laptops, miscellaneous stuff. To highlight here two points. First, the employee-related expenses appears to be significantly over budget. That's due to effective July 1st, the county approved an increase to our budget of $423,818, which was the parity adjustment to bring Utah County Public Defender Association employees on the same pay scale as county attorney employees. So although it shows $404,000 over budget, that budget doesn't factor in the $423,000 increase to the budget mid-year. And then in regards to program expenses, as we've addressed with the commission previously, that includes some capital cases, extraordinary cases, and defense resources that we just, you know, as shown in the slides earlier, there's just an unprecedented number of cases that we were assigned, significant increase there, and these are the corresponding significant increases in cost.
Do you not adopt a budget adjustment at any point then?
So for consistency in reporting to the county, we don't adjust the budget once it's been approved and we present it.
Even if there's a voted on contract adjustment?
I mean, we can absolutely adjust it if that's the preference of the commission. We've just, for consistency of quarter to quarter reporting, we've left it.
So oftentimes what we'll do as a county is we have our adopted budget and we'll have that, and then we'll have an adjusted budget because obviously like a mid-year, you know, came. I think we had four contract adjustments last year. And so then we'll do an adjusted budget amount and then we'll do the actual. And that actually helps us when you're reporting to have the adopted budget, then the adjusted budget, and then the actuals.
Yeah, we can absolutely
do that. I think
that
makes it a little bit less
forward.
Confusing.
Yeah, we will do that moving forward.
And that screen, Ben, is just Q1 to Q3 in
no,
23.
Oh, I apologize. That okay. Title has not been updated. That's the full year.
I was thinking
apologies.
That's what you meant.
Yep. Okay. Nope. That was an error on my part.
All right.
And it's probably carries through on the next few slides. So, but yes, this is full year.
Okay.
So within those three categories explained earlier, this is the detailed breakout of where that number is made, how that number is made up. Again, an adjustment of maintaining parity with county attorneys when their pay scale changed was the resulting difference in this payroll. And for future presentations, we will have a budget and an adjusted budget columns. Pending any questions on that, we'll move on to the defense resources. A couple to highlight here. First, with the time period between when we the market change in salaries that we saw, and the county attorney's change in payroll, and then our corresponding change in payroll that was done in September but backdated to July 1st. There was a high turnover in employees. We had 6 attorneys that we lost in that time period. So there's a big increase in contract labor to cover that gap as we were turning over to hire new attorneys. So that's kind of the explanation for that. The line 62311, district juvenile attorney contracts, we broke that out as a separate line just to show the adding of a 6th court in the juvenile court system, which required us to hire 2 conflict contracts that began in Q4. So I just highlighted that because it was not a budgeted line item, but an expense that we incurred. And then appeals attorneys, as the caseload for our appeals attorneys exceeds their capacity, we contract those out. And you can see that was significantly higher, which is the reason for our ask for an additional appeals attorney to bring that back in line with historical numbers and what we would expect. And then, as discussed earlier, the excess in extraordinary expenses is reflected here as well. Pending any questions on the details of this, these are the court-related cases, kind of direct expenses, defense resources. And then finally, the general administrative. I think the only thing to highlight here is that we received a non-lapsing funding in a grant from the IDC in January 2023 after the budget had been approved for some additional office expense and computer equipment upgrades. And so, again, moving forward, we'll update the budget on that so that it's reflected. But that's the explanation for that difference in budget versus actual. So not actually over budget based on the grant that was received post-budget adoption. So just a reminder of our conversation from last quarter of our budget requests. The first one has been approved and is codified in our contract for 2024. All the other ones have been not yet approved. We've approved a temporary budget for Q1 and Q2 pending the results of an audit. We met with the audit committee this morning, so that's on track and moving forward, and we hope that we can revisit these to continue discussion on them as we, once we have those audit results, you know, validifying these requests from the commission's perspective. So are there any questions on those?
Can you email us these slides, by the way, as well?
Yeah.
I think you've done that in the past.
I have in the past, but I can send it again. Not a problem at all.
Great.
So then that's the conclusion of our presentation. If there's no further questions, that will end.
Nope. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ben and Josh. Moving on back to our consent agenda. Items 14 and 15. I'm having struggles with lowering the insurance liability requirements. Part of my thinking is, as a prior insurance agent, we ask people to carry that mainly because the number that we as a county ask for is what is the word I'm looking for, Katrina? The government immunity.
Yes.
Type.
The Government Immunity Act.
Government Immunity Act is at that $3 million, correct? And so, personally, I see that if there was an appetite to make a change, I just struggle with always approving these, because then if I get into a I chose you but not you and this event over that event, then that's my struggle. So that's why I wanted to hold item 14 and 15. I'm leaning towards a denial on those.
For the sake of efficiency, I have historically not having an insurance agent background. I have historically approved those. And so I try to make sure that my voting record is always consistent, even if that means that we disagree. I have traditionally approved those. And in order to maintain consistent, In this case, I'm going to make a motion to approve these.
So if that motion died for a lack of a second today, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? No, don't make us arm wrestle, because I do not want to publicly lose to Amelia in an arm wrestle, but...
No, if there's no second, it would die, and it just wouldn't be approved.
Can I speak to 14? I'm here to represent 14.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. We'll give you a couple minutes.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Sure.
My name is Casey Brady. I'm with Utah Bow Fishing Association.
Okay.
So the only reason why I've asked for this variance on my side is because the only part that would be of the tournament that would be taking place on county grounds would just be where they're launching from and when they're coming back, and then we're having like an award ceremony. The tournament itself is being handled on Utah Lake, and so the county doesn't, that's over Utah State, and I have the necessary permits through the state and through with the DNR to hold the tournament, and they've been sufficed with the $2 million insurance that we currently carry, with the county requesting the $3 million just for the event insurance because we're launching out of Lincoln Beach. It puts us, we're a nonprofit, we're just getting up going again. It puts us out of budget to where we might not be able to host the event. When that's just a super small part of what's actually happening, is just the ceremony of awards at the end of the tournament on the Sunday after it's complete. And so the event insurance was just covering that part of that when I have everything else a part of it. And I have, you know, Utah Lake Authority is a partner of ours, and DNR is partnering up. The reason for this is the conservation of Utah Lake in removing carp. And that's what we're trying to cooperate with the state to do. And I'd hate to have it die because of a budget reason like this.
When is your event?
The April 27th and 28th.
Out of curiosity, what is bow fishing?
So it's actually fishing, but it's like a mix between hunting and fishing, where we retrieve,
legitimately using a bow.
We use bow and arrows to harvest a target species. So carp is what we're going after at Utah Lake. Historically, we're anticipating of having like over 120,000 pounds of carp removed from the lake on those 2 days. There's going to be a lot of pre-scouting and things happening by the individual teams beforehand, as well as coming back. And so we're just trying to, the Utah Lake Authority has a new mission to try to encourage the public to help remove the carp. The company that was doing it, Lloyd Fisheries, is no longer doing it. They're no longer contracted with the state. And so we're making an effort and trying to get the public involved in doing so. And this is, it's a killer for us. We don't have a lot of money. It's just a club, basically. We're running off of donations and funding that way through raffles and things like that. And so the added cost gives us about $2,500 of added cost that we didn't have, and puts a little bit of a burden on us.
So the additional $1 million is $2,500.
It goes, so our one event insurance for the weekend went from $426 to like $2,430 or something. So,
couple thousand.
And that's just the hard cost of just the insurance on that. So that's the reason for me to come to try to plead my case, because it is such a small part of the whole weekend. The whole tournament is going to be held on the lake, and those permits are satisfied with the $2 million. So to have the added cost for just such a small part of the event launching out of Lincoln Beach, puts us in a little bit of a bind.
Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Yeah,
appreciate the update.
No problem. Thank you.
My questions on this are, if the governmental immunity is at $3 million and the insurance is $2 million, there's no way we're the only governmental entity having this issue.
Right. We would all be named in a lawsuit, depending on the lawsuit.
Right.
Right. So if somebody launches their boat and there's an accident.
Do we need to initiate a law change to see if we can have our legislators change this so that the governmental immunity is at $2 million instead of $3
million? Well, it's always been my issue. Consistency. You know, if the state or the lake authority is okay with less, but our policy is more, you're absolutely going down the right road. But for me, and again, you're going with consistency as well as, you know, what we're trying to do is be consistent.
And I would like a long-term solution for this. If we need to engage our legislators to say, hey, we've got a problem here. We've got $1 million gap, which the number of events that we host that have that $1 million gap, and if this is per occurrence, like that's a huge open liability, right?
Yeah, and...
And I mean, as entertaining as bow fishing sounds, it doesn't sound like undangerous.
Yeah, and
no, it doesn't sound undangerous.
It's great. Yeah, it is a good time. They won't be doing any dangerous activity on county grounds, though, is what.
Good point.
We're getting caught up on the event of what's happening with the bow fishing, but that's all happening on the state land of the lake. So to have the county, you know, be assuming the liability of what's happening in the lake is not what's happening. The event, the only thing that the county event permit is for is just for the award ceremony that happens after the tournament's over and for reading the rules and things like that before we launch. But, you know, besides that, that's all I would handle. So launching the boat, that, you know, that's a gray area. I'm not sure if that would land on county or if it landed on state because it's in state lines, but it's on county ramps, right? So... And that's part of the gray area, but you know, all of the actions of the fishing tournament is happening on the lake, not on the county grounds. And to be frank, we would still hold the tournament. I would just cancel all the rentals that I paid for the pavilion and the spots at Lincoln Beach and try to find a private ground to hold it on.
Understood.
Or a stake.
Okay, so for me, the biggest challenge, and then having two items on the agenda, and the next one being a bike race. You know, this is similar for me. And so I'm wondering if I'm probably looking at Paul and Ezra to say this would probably push for a week if it died for a lack of a second. And then if Commissioner Sakovic...
I could make a motion to continue the item for 1 week.
Commissioner Sakovic has kind of signaled that maybe next week's is return back to work week. And maybe there's
I will modify my motion. And I will make a motion to continue this item for 1 week until either A, we can get a third commissioner, or B, we can figure out why there's a gap in insurance policies and liability.
Does 1 week hurt your ability to get a permit and move
forward? Our registration started despite. We're still going to try to move forward, like I said, but it would just be us trying to find a different location than a county ground.
Okay.
And that's the hard part, too, is like even if I move the event off of county ground, the participants are still going to be launching from Lincoln Beach or Goshen Bay or something.
Yep.
Like that.
Yeah, but then it would be on an individual basis.
But then
it would
be on
point.
An individual basis, and I wouldn't need the permit from the county.
So yeah.
The only thing that would be affecting the county is me canceling my...
Well, this is one of the reasons that it's difficult to have a three-member commission with one member having been gone for 8 weeks, is because we can't make these types of decisions. So the best I can say is to continue it 1 week and hopefully come up with a solution in that week.
So let's... We'll continue it and then see. We want you to have your event.
Yes.
I just struggle with, you know, if there is an accident, then that consistency on me is right.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get my head around it, right. You know. And unfortunately, I'm that insurance guy, you know.
Would it help to see our waiver pretty much indemnified anyway?
I wish, but as a city councilman in Spanish Fork, that waiver for bull riding didn't hold. We were in a lot of litigation with a lot of junior buckaroos. And so anyway, so that's kind of where I'm just coming from. But I think we can find a solution for you to be able to have your event.
Is there a place to see if he's going to be here or if the other councilman is going to be here?
I wish.
Okay.
I wish we knew when he was going to be here and when he wasn't. That would be fantastic.
And Katrina, you have contact information as well that we could get with the applicants. I'm putting you on the spot, but... You know, we want to make sure we get to a good spot. So, okay. So 14 and 15, motion to continue those 1 week.
Aye.
There we go. Or second, all in favor, say aye.
Yeah.
Okay, that passed. Okay, thank you. Item number 20, property tax actions.
Our favorite subject.
Yeah.
I cannot get bow fishing out of my head. It's like I'm imagining a monkey. Yeah, I might have to.
It's a good day. Frankly, Amelia, it's a great... I did it 55 years ago in Utah Lake, and we played out 600 carp.
If you take those to my grandma's, we used to have to take them to her flower garden and garden the carp. so that they would fertilize, right, after. So.
Yeah, that's the efforts. I mean, the state and Utah Lake, they're handling the disposal. When you're talking about, you know, close to 200,000 pounds of fish in a two-day span, it's quite a feat. So I hate to lose the efforts of the state and Utah Lake if they're in something.
Yeah.
Thank you. We will see if we can come.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Adam.
Thank you. Adam Beck, County Attorney's Office. There was one item that I wanted to hold. It's that Flagship Development Incorporated. Counsel for Flagship is here. And when I get done, we can give him an opportunity to speak. So just as a little background information, last year we had the recommendation letter 2023-15, and that item was about a park and vineyard, the Penny Springs Park. That the area is used as a park by Vineyard. However, Vineyard does not own that area. The area is divided into two parcels. Last year, they came and were asking for a refund and abatement of the taxes of that property. And then it was my understanding that the plan was to then deed that parcel over to Vineyard. The recommendation from the county at that time was to deny. This board approved that on a parcel. Now, here we are, fast forward a few months. They've come back on the other parcel for the park. The concerns that the county had last time are the same now. When you
say the county, you mean like the assessor's office, the recorder's office, and the attorney's office?
Yes, okay. You're right. Yeah, that's a good clarification.
Just clarifying.
Yes, and the property tax officer as well.
Yes.
And that was that currently, as far as the recorded plat, everything that we see is that the property potentially could be developed. There's nothing that's prohibiting development from there. It is not an exempt entity at this point. And so that is why our recommendation is to deny this application.
Thanks, Adam. And someone from Flagship's here. Okay.
Indeed. Good afternoon, commissioners.
Tell us your name.
Tyler Lamar.
Tyler.
So last time I was here on behalf of the HOA, this time I'm here on behalf of Flagship. So there are two parcels that split and are in a triangular shape that form Penny Springs Park. In July 2020, a subdivision plat was approved that would have dedicated that park to Vineyard City. For whatever reason, the plat was not recorded in 2020, but the park was always treated like a public park. So since 2020, Vineyard has been in control of the maintenance. They had a ribbon cutting. The public has visited the park and treated it as a public park. It's listed as a public park through Vineyard City's website. It has not been treated as land that can be developed or treated for private use or offered for sale or used in any kind of private capacity. Since that time, there's been ongoing discussions. There were some taxes paid in error and then some taxes not paid with respect to those parcels. This commission previously approved an abatement for the years since July 2020. For those taxes that were not paid, and then a reimbursement for the taxes that were paid dating back to July 20th, 2020. And the commission at the time I was here previously approved the other one, but it was pointed out by council that was not a pending application. So we were asked to go through the formality of submitting an additional application for the other related and adjacent parcel. So we've done that. Now we're here before the commission on the same legal and factual basis that the taxes should be abated and refunded because it's been treated as a public park, maintained as a public park. And the deeds, although on the record show an HOA or Flagship, the property should have transferred in July 2020, but for this tax issue that has hung us up. So as soon as the taxes are abated and refunded, we have an approved plat that's been signed and can be submitted with Vineyard City. This is the only thing precluding the recordation of that plat, at which time everything will be synced up and we'll be in a position to not have people that are not truly the owners of that park being taxed as if it were private developable land. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
So the plan is to deed it to Vineyard City.
Absolutely. This is the only barrier, and there's a plat on record with Vineyard. It's been submitted by Vineyard for recordation, but the county assessor will not accept the plat until this tax issue has been resolved.
Wish we knew somebody from Vineyard.
I know. And Ezra, can you confirm for us that that's budgeted and maintained as a city park for Vineyard?
Yes. I mean, as of when I was there, which was 3 months ago. I can confirm that. I mean, I could confirm the other thing. But
do we know if we've like fixed the loophole in Vineyard that they're actually like maintaining property that they don't have deeds for?
Yeah, we're actually working on that. There's a number
of
cities.
It's a young city, so we're going to give them a break. But yeah, I want to pick this for the future.
This has been not an uncommon issue for some of the fast-growing cities in the county. Saratoga Springs has a number of parcels that have kind of fallen into a similar situation where the city's responsible for paying taxes on city-owned land that's being used for public use. But I'm actually working with the recorder, the assessor, on kind of fixing all those and going through and taking care of those issues across the board.
So we're using this as a learning experience to prevent this happening in the future as much as possible?
Yes.
With the information that it's going to be deeded to Vineyard, does our attorney's office and staff, I mean, once I understand why you have heartburn with it now, but if it does get deeded to the city, does that help with support from staff? Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
If it was owned by Vineyard, then that would be an exempt entity. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, my heartburn would be alleviated a little
bit.
But I think that's one of the reasons why Vineyard has not taken it, is they want to make sure that the taxes are taken care of. So it's trying to figure out who's going to take care of that first.
So I would dispute that only in this respect. Vineyard is anxious to receive a deed to it. The only thing preventing that is the recordation of the plat, which is the instrument which dedicates it to the city. So there really is no legal mechanism that I'm aware of for Vineyard to take title of this, but for the recordation of the plat, and this is what is preventing us from doing that.
Right, and if they were to pay that, then that would just get passed on to their citizens as a tax in their budget, which they shouldn't have been paying tax on in the first place. I'm fine abating this. So I could make a motion to accept item number 20 with the exception of that one, but choosing to abate that one. So taking the recommendations of the attorney's office on the items on number 20 with the exception of this one where we would abate that.
Real quick, also there is a slight typo on the Matthew and Elizabeth Lohner. The correct property number there is 106435 instead of 431. So
yeah, and that in the too. Friendly amendment to my motion.
Okay, terrific. I can second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you, commissioners. Appreciate it.
Okay. Before we go to public comment, personal privilege. At the first of the year, when staff approached me as a new chair and said, hey, we have Zoom comment. And I said, well, we don't normally get much Zoom comment. So I made a decision and said, hey, we're not going to ask for Zoom comment. And I'm wanting to apologize to you, Commissioner Gardner, because I think that blindsided you. There was an article that came out, and I don't know elected officials that are more open. I'll give you my cell phone anytime, and I know Commissioner Gardner makes herself very available all the time. So the last thing I wanted was for that to be a blind side to you and have your husband reading that article or whatever happened. And so that's certainly not the case. We do not want to stop any public comment here at Utah County. We want to welcome it. We always want to do that. And so if there's a case where we need to go back onto Zoom, my thinking was it was kind of a COVID thing, and so we hadn't had any for at least my first year. And so I apologize because I did not check with you. So I'm publicly apologizing And my wife will be really proud of me because, you know, I normally don't apologize. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a grown man, and I'm really just, you know, wanting to apologize for that. So I'm sorry. Well, I'm so sorry.
After that little fiasco, I did look into it and find that there's actually a significant monetary cost for having a lot of that open rather than just in internal meetings because of the protections that we have to have. Because an open Zoom meeting, you have the risk of getting Zoom bombed, which has happened before. So therefore, we have to have a higher level. And so I do recognize that there is a financial savings. So I would be fine either way. I mean, obviously, in a year that we're running a deficit, we need to cut everywhere we can. And we're not restricting public comment because people can come here. So recognizing there's a financial savings, I can understand why you made the decision you made.
It somewhat felt like maybe the articles, I don't want to say it's, you know, silly campaign season and political, but some of that could be taking place at the same time. If you know your three commissioners, they are as accessible as we want to make ourselves very. I mean, like I say, I asked the reporter to print my cell phone if they want in the article, and I'm completely okay with that. It's a personal cell phone. So
I sent mine out on my mailers.
Personal privilege is all I wanted to do there. Yeah. And so, okay. Moving on to public comment. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the commission? Okay, seeing none, we'll go into closed session. Thank you, everyone.
Fence. Remember when someone said that I had hired my aunt, Roseanne?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we used the family.
Okay, we're back in session. I'll take one final motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everyone.